Coming up next, Chris Tarr. You know, he's been very busy with his new director of engineering position at Magnum Media. Been installing transmitters and dealing with things like a downed tower, an AM long wire antenna, and a lot more, including a lot of translators. His advice on practical engineering is coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. Maybe you've got a bunch of those. Maybe you've got a white flashy one. Maybe you've got a short tower and it doesn't need a light. Well, whatever you got, we're going to talk about it here on This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. This is my little humble abode, and this is where I do my shows from. It is it's a beautiful sunny day here in Nashville. Going to be nice tomorrow, too, until it starts raining, and then the snow comes. Yeah, we got snow coming in here on Friday night and Saturday, and then super cold temperatures Saturday night, and then Sunday's going to be cold, and then back up to warm weather sometime next week. So I'm kind of excited about that. Not excited about the snow, but you know how winter is. It just won't leave. Winter's like it leaves, and then it runs right back in, and it says, and another thing.
I'm sobbing for you. I'm really sobbing for you. Oh, no, poor guy. It's going to get cold out. Oh, no.
That's Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, welcome in. Good to see you.
It's going to get to like 30 degrees over here. Oh.
We make it down in the teens on Saturday night.
Well, we're going to get down. We'll get down colder than that. I'm not going to try to outweather you, just to say I don't feel bad for you for a minute on that.
But, you know, you chose to live in Muckwonago, Wisconsin.
So. I'm not complaining. I mean, well, okay, I do complain sometimes, but it's usually when I'm out working at sites and everything, and it's, you know, windy and cold, and I just want to nope right out of there. So,
well, weather aside, Chris, it's good to see you. And today's show is going to be a number of different ideas about the practical side of engineering. You've had some interesting events happen, Chris, with your full-time engineering gig that are probably worth relaying. You've been saving up a few. Hey, I could talk about this. I could talk about that. So
sure.
It's great that this show, This Week in Radio Tech, can give you practical ideas and tips, not just tips and tricks, but I mean, actual ways of getting things done that help you with your daily engineering tasks. And as we roll into that, I got a couple of really practical ideas for you. Practical idea number one is you should go to radio-guide.com on the interwebs, and that's where you can read the latest edition of Radio Guide magazine. The thing about Radio Guide is long articles. They can really go in depth with the engineering articles in Radio Guide at radio-guide.com. You can also subscribe to Radio Guide there. Ray Topp is the publisher and does a great job. He gives authors many words to get something talked about, and also room for diagrams and lots of explanations. So I like it. Radio Guide magazine, just terrific. The other thing I like is another way that engineers get together and talk about engineering topics, especially very topical ones like IT security. In fact, I'm going to be on an upcoming show here in the next few weeks with Jeff Welton at Nautel on Nautel's Transmission Talk Tuesdays. And we got a little quick clip teed up for you right now about something about hard hats at transmitter sites. Jeff, take it away here.
Speaking of ice falling on things, and specifically personal safety, which we'll probably get to in a little bit, I have a rule that I think everybody should follow, or if you're new to cold weather country, pay attention to this. Always wear a hard hat around your towers when they have any ice on them, especially if you have FMDs or any sort of, antennas on the tower, or even an AM tower. because it will, the ice will fall off and eventually clock you or whoever else is on the ground.
That is a great idea. I've been around a tower with ice chunks falling off of it and had no idea that a hard hat would be a good idea. Luckily, I didn't get hit in the head. I did get hit in the back with a chunk of ice falling at, who knows, 100 miles an hour or something. So Transmission Talk Tuesdays, you can sign up for those webinars. And they're not really webinars per se. They are roundtable discussions. So they have a couple of expert guests, typically, along with Jeff Wilton, to talk about a topic. And you get to participate if you want, if you have something to chime in, if you have an idea, a question, if you know something additional about the topic that you'd like to contribute, you can do so. Go to nautel.com/webinars and sign up for Transmission Talk Tuesdays every Tuesday. Transmission Talk Tuesdays. Again, that's nautel.com/webinars. You can sign up for several webinars upcoming if you want to at about the same time. So it's easy to do. And they'll send you an email to remind you. Chris Tarr, have you ever been around towers when ice is falling off the tower?
Oh, only just about every year.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a pretty common thing here. And
yeah,
you're right about the hard hats. And also, you got to be careful where you park your car. So,
I've seen, and
it's interesting because when that ice falls and hits the ground, it sounds like gunshots going off, just like whack. You know, I had a building several years ago, needed to put a new roof on it. Just over the years, the ice pelting it just finally took it out. So yeah, it's a pretty common thing around here.
Wow. Yeah. I've only experienced that once. It was in Frenchman's Bayou, Arkansas, with a rare ice storm on a 710-foot tower and chunks just falling off. And of course the station was off the air, had no power. Nobody had power. Power was off for miles and miles. And the generator had the fuel had gelled up, I guess. It didn't have the right anti-gel stuff in it. Why would it? We were in Arkansas. And so I think I took I'm not suggesting people do this in practical engineering, but I took a propane torch and started warming up the fuel line between the big tank and the day tank. And then between the day tank and the generator. And I don't know how dangerous that was to apply heat to a fuel line.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
But I just warmed it up, just kept it moving, warmed it up, and eventually got the engine started, and we were back on the air.
Well, you got the end result, so that's what matters.
That's right. All right, so Chris, you've got some practical engineering advice for us. You got a number of stories. Well, you being the director of engineering for Magnum Media, you're in charge of a whole lot of stuff there, and you get to oversee things that work and things that don't.
Yeah. I mean, we're up to, I think, almost 50 signals now across the state. What I really want to preface this with first, though, is I need to really give a shout out to my team. I have some of the best technical coworkers on the planet. I have John Zeckerly, who handles a lot of my transmitter stuff. Jim Zastro, who's another transmitter guy. I've got Cliff Groth, who's a WBA Hall of Fame member, as an engineer, Bob Gorjantz, Eric Bernstad, you know, just a really good team of guys that really we inherited them. They've been with the group for a long, long time. And when I stepped in, I've known all these guys for years, but the opportunity to work alongside with them has been great. So a lot of these stories, you know, have good outcomes, and a lot of times because of them. You know, I obviously, with this many stations, you can't do it all yourself. So we're very much a big team. And I'll tell you, in the past 2 years, I got to say maybe close to 10 translators I've put on. I've put in a new FM transmitter, a new AM transmitter. Year and a half ago, we bought 6 radio stations. So, I mean, you know, we've constantly been moving around. the latest thing we've dealt with is we had a tower fall. Couple weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks ago? Almost 3 weeks ago now. Speaking of ice, we had ice in the area, and we had an AM tower that it was very nice. It fell very cleanly and quietly and just, you know, didn't hit anything on the way down. So it landed in the field, but we had to build a long wire antenna in order to get back on the air. So, you know, that's something if, you know, carry around in, you know, in your mental toolbox, especially hams tend to know a lot about this, is, you know, keep the stuff handy, or at least know where you can get things to put together a long wire antenna if you have an AM station, because coincidentally, it's the second one I've had to build. I had another tower for a group I was doing consulting work for. I don't know, probably 5 years ago, had a tower fall. Same thing. I had to go out and build a long wire antenna. And basically, you know, what that is it's just a length of wire that you can hopefully get to, you know, quarter wavelength or whatever. Get it up off the ground horizontally as far out as you can go and wire it into your transmitter and load RF into it. Generally, you can get anywhere from, you know, 50 watts to 500 watts into these wire antennas, certainly enough to cover the city of license. And then the FCC is excellent about granting emergency STAs for these. You know, they're great temporary antennas. And even if you have a situation where you can't use your antenna for whatever reason, you know, if it hasn't fallen, if it's just there's something physically wrong, broken insulators, whatever, this is a great, quick, and dirty way to get yourself back on the air. And to file for these things with the FCC, there's a few things you have to do. The FCC likes you to draw out the configuration of the wire, you know, heights and how it's attached to everything. But, you know, once you do all that and submit it, it gets turned around pretty quickly. But again, that was something where, you know, I called out the crew and we all got together and they got it done. And by the next day, you know, the day after the tower fell, we were back on the air. And additionally, what's great is this is an AM with an FM translator. So by the rules, we couldn't leave the translator on without the AM. So, you know, we wanted to get the AM on more importantly for the FM translator. You know, so even if we get it on at 50 or 100 watts or whatever, just something that would allow us to keep the translator on. So we were able to do that. And the AM signal covers the city of license just fine. So it really came out ahead in the deal.
I'd love to, you know, to hear a progression through the story if you want to tell it, but I've got some immediate questions. They're just burning questions here. Was the FM translator co-located on the AM tower or elsewhere?
It was not. And that's something else we're going to talk about in a little bit of how I cite these translators. So,
okay. We'll wait for that. Okay. If got to ask, if an AM tower falls and there's no one around to hear, does it make a noise?
Make a sound? I'm going to say no. I'm just going to make that guess right now. Okay. I think it's all a figment of our imagination.
Was there snow cover? Did it fall within the radius of the property?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I said about like a perfect fall. It fell exactly the way it was designed to fall, which was out in the field behind the buildings. So in fact, and it wasn't even like, it was a very graceful fall as far as that's concerned. There wasn't even enough power behind it to like bury the steel into the ground or whatever. It just kind of very gently just fell over. So,
What size tower was bent. Its height in face?
It was, I want to say 325 feet. And, and I think a 6-inch face. So it was, wasn't anything real rugged.
This would have been a lighted tower and a single tower?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yep.
So not part omnidirectional of a directional array. Right? Okay. No. And that's a whole other, you know, with, you know, long wire. You can do long wires for an array as well. Although generally in an array, you lose one tower and you can load, you know, one of the other ones. But this was an omnidirectional just outside of town. No one in town would have known except that we actually went on the air to talk about it just because we didn't want to, you know, we didn't want people to think that, you know, there's something going on with the tower all of a sudden gone or anything like that. We actually discussed it on the air and talked about the fact that the tower fell due to weather. It was a real, I was pretty calm about it. It's the second one that I've had to deal with. My coworker who owns the group, he was a little more anxious about it. He'd never gone through that before. I was, you know, able to assure him that, you know, not a huge, I mean, obviously it's a huge thing, but you know, it's certainly not the end of the world. And we were on the air the next day. So
did you determine if it was a structural failure of the tower or a guy wire failure or something else?
It was a guy wire failure. We think, you know, we're still kind of looking through it, but we think that it was a combination. I think there was the ice buildup on the tower caused, we think maybe one of the guy wires to come loose or something. We just, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. We just know that there's a lot of ice in the area.
Did it crumple or fall straight over?
It pretty much fell straight over. You know, normally those things fold, and it did do a little folding, but it really kind of more bent and then fell than anything else. So
now normally,
it could have been a lot worse.
An omnidirectional AM, it's that the tower is going to be the tallest thing around in the area, except maybe for some trees or telephone poles. So normally the ideal thing from which to hang a long wire would be from partway up a tower, because that would be some height right there. And long wires, you know, yes, they're going to be stretched horizontally, but you want to get them as high off the ground as you can. So I got to ask you, how did you then string a long wire if the tallest thing in the area is now on the ground?
Well, with the long wire, though, you don't necessarily have to get it as high off the ground as you need, because again, the angle is coming off the side of the wire, which is horizontal. So, you know, that is actually where, you know, your signal comes off of that this way rather than this way off the vertical structure. And if you remember, I mean, back in the early days of radio, they were all long wire antennas. So we got it up about 20 feet. What we were able to do is we had right outside of the transmitter building, there was an electrical pole, and then all the way across our yard, and we, you know, we're out in the middle of the country. So way across the other end of the lot is another pole that we had mounted a satellite dish on at one time. So we were able to just string it all the way from one to the other and use a rope to kind of winch it up into the air and tie it up.
Okay, what was your insulator? Because you don't want either end to be attached to ground or to the pole itself. So did you insulate the ends of this, right?
Again, this is where, you know, having a group of guys is fantastic, because one of them happened to have a couple insulators that he brought with him. So, you know, again, that's, you know, one of the biggest things about doing this job is you really have to have, you know, some good people working with you and the best. And every one of them called and said, what can I do? What can I do? I have this, I have that, you know, and I can be there tomorrow with, you know, wire. I've got insulators. I've got their rope. And so, you know, we were able to pretty quickly come together with a plan, and everybody had, you know, brought something to the table to get this done. It could have been bad, and it really wasn't. You know, everybody kept their cool. And again, within 24 hours, we were back on the air and had the STA filed. So
did you use the ATU, the antenna tuning unit? I assume you have a box next to the where the tower used to be, and you probably have an output insulator bowl on it, like so many of them are built, and used to go to the tower. Now, did you go from that point up to the new long wire?
Didn't need to, because the transmitter that we're using is a Gates 1, and that has tuning on the top, you know, coming out of the output of the transmitter. So we were able to match it with that and get close. I mean, it's not a perfect match; it's just enough to get us 100 watts out of it, which again was, you know, we were talking about, you know, either using the ATU or putting in a coil or a cap or two to kind of make it work, but it was good enough. You know, but fortunately we're right outside of town, so, you know, even at 100 watts we covered the town easily. So, you know, I like to look at that and it's kind of like, you know, I think it was the Apollo 13 movie where, you know, you'd look at that as kind of your biggest failure, but it was actually one of our biggest, you know, accomplishments. To be able to get this all done in 24 hours and again get it back on the air and get the licensing or the STA done. So I'm very proud of my guys for doing that. I mean, it was amazing.
Did you have the equipment to measure the impedance of the long wire at your AM frequency?
Yes. I don't recall what that would have been. Not my head. But, I mean, we did that. We were able to do that. We were able to calculate it, really. I mean, we had the wire, we knew how long we were going to cut it. So we knew out of the gate that once it was up, it was going to tune, or at least tune well enough.
So how did you, I know I haven't seen the site or we don't have a picture, but how did you wire from the output of the transmitter? And you said you didn't use the ATU, came out of the transmitter. Mm-hmm. How'd you get that physically up to the long wire?
One of the guys brought some coax. So we had some coax that went from the output of the transmitter out to where the wire was. And that's where they did the grounding and the connection to the long wire was right outside on the power pole. So okay. Again, like I say, it was really everybody kind of brought some, you know, whatever they had sitting around and, you know, got together and got it back on the air. And that's kind of how we handle a lot of these emergencies like that is, you know, everybody really pitches in and brings something to the table and we'll get on a call with everybody. In fact, I remember when I got the call, you know, of course me, I couldn't be super serious about why I called everybody else. So I started calling my guys and, hey, John, remember that tower we used to have in Reedsburg? Yeah. Well, yeah. He's like, what do you mean we used to have? He said, well, it's not there anymore. You know, so, you know, but they, you know, immediately we're like, well, what do you need? What can we bring? You know, what do you think we should do? And they really just jumped to it and we got it done. So, you know, it's something that it's interesting because a lot of times people won't even have that happen once in their career. And I've already had it happen twice. So I don't know if I'm the problem or what the deal is here. But I do, you know, I do find it interesting. And, you know, the replacement, we're still talking about what we're going to do for replacement. But at least we're on and we've got some time now to make some thoughtful decisions on what we're going to do next.
I've actually had a tower fall as a WROX in Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Yes.
And that tower fell after an ice storm, some kind of storm, and we did a long wire. But we had a tube-type transmitter, good old some kind of RCA, and it probably didn't, you know, it would have loaded up into a wet noodle just fine.
I was going to say, you could load that into a brick. It'd probably be okay.
Brick, yeah. So, I strung a long wire. I found some kind of insulator somewhere out of a shortwave radio receiving antenna. Had some plastic insulators, and they were just barely those strong enough to hold the weight of the wire, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, if you take care of AM stations, it's probably not a bad idea to put together a little kit of just some insulators and some wire, and just have it sitting aside in case you need it. And that way, you know, you're not having to struggle to get something put back on the air right away. You have all the parts you need, and you hope you never use them. But you've got them, and they're cheap.
I was going to say, if the tower fell down, you might be able to have salvaged some insulators from the guy wires that came down too. They would have had insulators in them.
Sure, right? Sure. I mean, they're a little. Those are the ceramic ones. Are probably a little big for what you want to use them for. I mean, they'd work, but I like those little fiberglass guys, plastic. They're really handy, light, and easy to use.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had a couple of those. We needed some rope to pull the wire. I think we had, you know, number 10, number 8 wire and, just a little hunk of coax. And, you know, we measured out how many feet we'd need to be approximate a quarter wave. And it came out, I think it was 170 some feet and laid it out, turned it on and came right up. So, we're very fortunate. So that's story number one.
It sounds like the tower had been about a half wave tower, maybe a 5/8 wave.
It was, yeah, tower. Because originally there was an FM on there. So originally, it was built high for that. So depending on what we do, you know, we're talking about, you know, if we rebuild that, you know, there's a couple of different antennas we can get, but you know, it's going to be much shorter than the one that was there because we don't need that height anymore.
Right.
Because the FM that was there is long gone.
Also did a long wire antenna in American Samoa. We wanted to keep an AM license alive. It's since been deleted, I believe. But we owned an AM, WVUV, and we didn't have access to the original transmitter site anymore on the other side of the island. And the transmitter, the studio transmitter building had burned down, or part of it had. And so we just used an LPB 30 watt AM transmitter. And I'm not sure if we got permission or not, but we ran a wire from outside the window of our studio building, second floor, over to the judicial building. I'm not sure if we asked if we could hook onto their building or not. Anyway, we ran over there, turned that transmitter on and told the FCC what we had done and got an STA for it and kept it on for a while until we finally decided, you know what? We checked out all the property we could and there was just not enough horizontal, you know, a nice flat horizontal land where you could put an AM is pretty valuable. We found a place, but the problem is they grew a lot of radishes there and they eventually would have gotten down to the ground system.
So, not good. Not good.
Not good. Hey, we're talking to Chris Tarr about practical engineering, and he certainly has filled us on a long wire. And that's something that, hey, you may still have to do from time to time, especially if your tower falls down. I'm Kirk Harnack. This is This Week in Radio Tech. Our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Angry Audio. And Angry Audio, well, that's owned by actually a personal friend of mine, Mike Dosh. Mike Dosh decided to go into business for himself and start building things that really help you in radio stations. You know, we've shown some of those. One of those is like the headphone gizmo right here. This is a great little headphone amp. And Mike also ended up purchasing Angry Audio, ended up getting all the assets of Studio Hub. And you know, Studio Hub is the company that makes these terrific adapters for wiring things together. Whether you're using an audio over IP system, and those devices tend to use RJ45 jacks for their audio ins and outs. They're very efficient. They're gold plated. There's great connectors, not just for computer networks, but also for analog audio and for AES EBU audio. So they make these great adapters, the whole range of adapters. Even if you like the, you know, here's a 6-foot adapter with a male RJ45 on one end to go into a piece of equipment and XLRs to go on the other. And they're available in all different shapes and sizes, but they've also come out with something new just in the last couple of months. And that is this headphone disconnector. So you got a professional studio environment where, or maybe a sports broadcast environment. Maybe it's a place where you don't usually go to, like you're doing a remote broadcast from a car dealer or a parade or who knows what. And you've got some talent on their headphones and you want to make sure they don't get up and walk away, take a bathroom break or whatever, and walk away and break off this or cause damage to your headphone amp, you know, by walking away while wearing the headphones. So this headphone disconnector has got this magnetic connector in it right here. So you plug this into your headphone amp and you plug your headphones into this end. And if they get up and walk away, well, bam, comes apart. It's a magnet holding that together. It goes right back together the way it's supposed to. It won't go back together the wrong way. It goes the right way. So you get your left and right audio right there. It's also available in the 3.5 millimeter size connector like that. And breaks away the same way. You can also mix and match these. You can match them so that if you've got a quarter inch, you know, to go into here, but your headphones have a 3.5 millimeter, you can put those together like that. There you go. Look at that. Headphone disconnector, headphone gizmo, and all kinds of really cool items from Angry Audio. Please check out their website at angryaudio.com. And then you can get their products from any broadcast equipment dealer, like Broadcasters General Store, who also sponsors this show. Hey, our show is also brought to you by Josh Bone and Max Connect Wireless right here. Here's Gary Morrill to make sure you know about it.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
I might be using this Max Connect wireless from Las Vegas because I'll be going to the NAB show, and I'll be there on the Thursday before at the Public Radio Engineering Conference. So if the Wi-Fi in the hotel is not up to snuff or what we need, we're going to use the Max Connect wireless. It'll give you connectivity where you need. And hey, I've used this thing before when internet has gone off at one of my radio stations. I happen to be in the area after a big storm, and this provided internet just great. Of course, you know that a MiFi or a 4G LTE modem would. The benefit of this is that it's prioritized over everybody else, and you get a fixed IP address. Check it out at Max Connect Wireless. It's at maxconnect.com. Yeah, it's spelled funny. We'll have a link in the show notes if you need to click on that to get you a good link to Max Connect Wireless. Hey, Chris Tarr is with me. And of course, normally he's the co-host. Today, he is the expert guest on This Week in Radio Tech talking about... Oh, don't laugh.
I don't know that I'd be calling myself an expert or anything, you know.
Well, okay. The experimental guest. How about that?
There you go. Yeah. Sorry, I'm looking at something down here on my desk here real quick. So I wanted to get into next. There, mm-hmm. You can go away now. what I want to talk to you next is we were talking about translators and citing those. And that's something I've been doing a lot of in the past year and a half. We had a lot of these the AM translators that we were able to get through the last translator window. And of course, those licenses were coming up for expiration, so we needed to get them built. excuse me, but we really put a lot of effort into these translators. You know, it's we look at them as opportunities to grow our AM signals. And a lot of times we actually will rent premium tower space. We just bought 10 new transmitters, 10 new FM transmitters for them. We buy high quality antennas, and we have, you know, some of these signals that perform as well as Class A signals around the state, and they've become very important to us, you know, as full-time facilities. We also have a couple that we've now lit up as translators for HD 2 and 3 channels. So we've really taken, you know, the opportunity to optimize some of these sites, some of these translators, and make them into something really important for our group. So that's, you know, kind of where we're going to go next here is, excuse me, when you have these opportunities for translators and some of the new rules that can really benefit you in changing things around translators. For example, there's a rule now with the FCC that allows you to to do a non, the old rule was three up, three down for channel changes on translators. Now, if you can do a study where you can find any channel that reduces the interference, to your adjacent channel that gives you less interference than what you had, you can make that change even more than three up, three down. So we have our consulting engineer that I work with. Every one of our translator properties, I've had him look through, do the research on the channels and say, you know, is the channel that we're on the best one, or is there now with the new rules one that's actually better that we maybe missed the last time when we had this window open? And in about two or three cases, we've been able to find a better channel, and, you know, either going from directional to non-directional, maybe a lower power to full power, or even staying at full power, but being on a channel that has less interference incoming and outgoing. So, we've really spent a lot of time, money, and effort on making, maximizing and optimizing these signals. And I'll tell you, we have a few of them that are just amazing. I mean, it's just unbelievable how well these perform. Because, you know, we're not afraid to pay, leases to American Tower or, whomever, and spend money on the right equipment and everything else to really build these out as if they were Class A signals. And we've really, in terms of return on investment, and that sort of thing, it has been really, really successful for us. And along the way, I've learned some interesting things on, content delivery, getting the signal there. MaxConnect is a tool that I have in my toolbox for sites where, I don't quite have the right connectivity yet, but I need to get something on the air. I signed one on my last translator. I signed on, Friday maybe? And that was the situation there where, actually I think it might've even been Monday, where I can't get the fiber in there right away. So I needed something to get audio to the site. So there's a MaxConnect and a couple of codecs, and we had audio to the site. So, that's been an interesting part and a big part of what I've been doing, and probably the past year for sure, is building out these translator sites. And we've done a lot of them. I mean, my coworker has done a great job. He really, every opportunity we had to get a translator for our AM stations, he did. And also had an opportunity a while back to buy several translator licenses from a group that was getting out of the business. And he bought those too without really knowing what we were going to do with them yet, and we found ways to even utilize those. So it's been, it's been a lot of fun to do that, but it's amazing how many people don't think about translators as anything other than a throwaway signal. It's a 250 watt translator. But I'll tell you, if you build them correctly, they work really, really well, and they sound good, and they can be competitive. We've got a couple of translators in La Crosse where In that area, the La Crosse itself is not, you know, land size wise, isn't that big. So we have two translators and they both cover the metro. Now they don't cover the farm fields out like the Class C's do, but in terms of covering in the metropolitan area, they cover the metro just fine. And those are, you know, used to be translators of other stations, and now they're their own station off of HD2 and at HD3. And we've had a lot of success with that.
I was going to ask you about that. You have translators that are retransmitting a main station's HD2 or HD3 as allowed in the rules, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So for people who don't have HD receivers, which probably is still most people, or many people don't realize they have them if they have a car that came with it. For them, this is like a they think of it as a standalone FM radio station that they hadn't heard of before, just discovered, or now are regular listeners to. Isn't that right?
Yep. And the benefit, there's a side benefit to that as well. I mean, we can get people to discover the stations on the FM translator, but as the HD radios become more and more rampant, and there was just something the other day, I think it's Toyota now, all of their cars are going to come with HD radios now. So as this happens, we can direct people to check out that same format on the HD channel, which is on a Class C and goes all over the place. So there's some opportunities there as well. And again, that goes back to, being practical, making sure that those HD signals sound good too. And don't use those as a throwaway. Well, it's just, I just need to have something there for the translator. You know, no, I mean, put processing in there, set the bit rates right. Make sure it's a good experience. I have artist experience on my HD sub channels. Sure, there are more people right now listening to the analog than the digital, but if they do check out the digital, I want it to be a good experience for them too. So yeah, I mean, there's two different types of translators you can get. You have the ones that, well, they're actually, I guess, three. There's, you know, the FM, the typical FM translator, which is just a fill-in. You've got the translators for the HD sub channels, which are fill-ins of the main channel. And then you've got these AM translators, which are translators of the AM, and those are locked to those stations forever. And we have a mix of several of them. And again, we looked at those as opportunities to add to our group and make them serious radio stations. And you know, instead of just this throwaway, oh, we got this, so let's just throw it on. And I've seen a lot of those. Where, you know, oh, it's a free FM for my AM, whatever, just throw it on there and do it as cheaply as possible. We spent some money on these, and you can tell they work really, really well. So as a practical matter, it kind of goes back to, you know, with all of this stuff, it's only as good as you make it. So, you know, these things could be a throwaway, and HD is a great example of that, because there are a lot of people who just think it's not worth it. So they don't put the effort into it, and all of a sudden they complain that nobody listens, or nobody cares about it. Well, yeah, I mean, if you don't care about it and you don't put the effort into it, it's going to show. And, you know, we spent, a great example of having to be committed to it is I had to go back to my coworker and say, hey, you know, I really think we need to spend, I think it was $3,000 for a Justin 808, which is a box that keeps the analog and digital time aligned down to the frame, as well as audio level alignment, because the La Crosse area has a lot of terrain. There's, you know, there's cliffs, or there's ridges, and there's the valley. And so if you don't have that aligned perfectly, the experience in HD is very poor, because it's constantly going back and forth from analog to digital. And as it rolls back and forth, there's these major changes. Well, people aren't going to want to deal with that. You know, they're going to find that to be really jarring. So, you know, it's $3,000 well spent to make that experience worthwhile. And he saw that. He's like, yeah, we need to do that. Because again, we could just go, well, it's HD, who cares? We need to, you know, if we don't,
Chris,
who is?
You mentioned the Justin 808. That's an Inovonics product, right? To keep HD and FM aligned. We're going to hear an ad here in a minute, or see an ad from Inovonics for HD Mod Monitor. And when we come back from that, Chris, I wonder if we might get some specific advice from you for building these translators. You know, what sure. do you try to do in terms of audio processing? What do you try to do in terms of getting the best quality signal to the site? Do you have to monitor off the HD2, or can you send audio separately in as high quality method as you can? What do you do in terms of the transmitter? Some old cast off thing that maybe has limited bandwidth. I want to hear how it is that you maximize the translator so it is the best experience for the listeners.
We'll get those
specifics coming up here in just a minute. This Week in Radio Tech brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store, where you can get the whole Inovonics product line. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Gary Lerman. I'm Sales and Marketing Manager from Inovonics. I'm joined here by our President and CEO, Ben Barber. And we're here to tell you about two new products that we're very excited about. They're HD modulation monitors, the model 551 and 552. And Ben's going to take us through some of the features. Ben, what can you tell us about these?
The 551 has the big display, 7-inch touchscreen display. You can look at different parameters instantly by walking up to it and touching it, getting information that you need. It also has the LED displays for FM total modulation, left, right, FM, HD 1, 2, 3, and 4. The other thing that the 551 has is that it has full-time audio outputs on studio hub connectors on the back, both analog as well as AES digital. So you've got FM, HD 1 through 4 there full-time. The 552 doesn't have the display, doesn't have the metering, and doesn't have the full-time audio outputs, but the web interfaces are identical for remote viewing and monitoring.
Great. Thanks very much, Ben. These products are going to be available in January 2022. Contact us at InnovonicsBroadcast.com for more information. Thanks very much.
And you can also contact Broadcasters General Store. The website is bgs.cc. Or you can call them at 352-622-7700 for Broadcasters General Stores. 352-622-7700. I've got that memorized, but if you don't have it memorized, you can write it down or find it, of course, on the website at bgs.cc and get all your broadcast products there at Broadcasters General Store. Thanks a lot to folks at Inovonics and BGS for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, continuing this discussion of translators, Chris Tarr, you know, I remember years ago, it was probably 15, 16, 17, 18 years ago when I got wind that a large nationwide religious or, you know, Christian broadcaster who has a lot of translators was buying up the best processors that Omnia was making at the time to put in some of their markets. I said, what? You're spending $9,000, $10,000 on a processor for a translator, for a 250 watt translator? You guys nuts? And they said, no, this translator, actually, we do it by market size. And if this translator is going to cover more than X number of potential listeners, then we put the best processor we can on it. For the really small ones, then we'll put the medium sized processor on. So I thought, wow, maybe that is really important. I kind of thought it was throwaway too, but yeah, no, not if you do it right. So talk to me about doing it right.
I started with a story from a couple of years ago with a station I was working with. They called me because they had a translator and they just felt like they could do better. And they couldn't really place their finger on it. And I drove up and audio quality wasn't that great. Coverage wasn't really what it should be. And I went in and looked, and sure enough, it was an old Nikon transmitter. It was a used antenna that they bought from somebody else. And it was an old hand-me-down processor. And you know, it was the best that it could probably be with that stuff. And I took him aside and I said, listen, you know, I got to be honest with you here. We're going to need to spend a little money if you really want this to be competitive. So he said, okay, you know, if we're going to do this, might as well just get it over with, you know? So I bought a Nautel transmitter with built-in Optimod, a Shively antenna, and put in a Comrex access unit for delivering audio. Later on, replaced it with an STL. And just, it was night and day. I mean, the minute I fired this up, the station owner drove around and just could not thank me enough for the improvement. Now, it was the same power level. It was the same location, the same format they had, but it was like an entirely different radio station. It sounded like a legitimate competitive radio station. And that's because that's how we treated it. We spent the money that you would spend building something competitively like that. And since then, I've done two more of his translators the same way, which leads me to how I build them now. My last purchase was 10 Gates Air Fax 1 translators with built-in processing, built-in RDS. And that's what I'm using now at these sites. And I'm deploying them with, you know, Shively, PSI. You know, I have a couple Nikom, the new Nikom antennas, depending on the situation. But it's all new antennas, all new coax, all new processing, all new transmitters. And you had asked this before, when you're feeding the HD translators or the AM translators, you do not have to take them off the air. You can feed them directly. So, you know, there's a couple of ways you can do that. Now, one example of an AM one that I did was I had a kind of a tricky AM site where I could get the signal to the, I could STL the signal to the AM, but then we had to do IP to the translator site. And that caused some issues because the IP wasn't real reliable there. So instead, I did the STL to the translator site and then took the AM programming off the air from the translator. So It's perfectly legal. I mean, there's nothing that says that you can't do it that, you know, there's nothing that dictates how you feed these things. As long as they're all fed the same thing. And when the main station's off, the translator's off. So sometimes it takes some creativity to do that. But in most cases now, I'm using Ubiquiti radios. And I'm using Ubiquiti radios with codecs, either the Zip ones. I've got some Tyline Bridgets. And, you know, I kind of have some scattered ones because I'm kind of doing a shootout to figure out which ones are going to work best for us. There's one site where I have the Mosley Rincon. But every translator I've built for this group has new transmitter. If it doesn't have built-in processing, it will have, you know, an Omnia 6, Omnia 9, Omnia 11. You know, we'll have a new antenna when we put it up. We will have gone through the process of checking the signal, making sure that is the best frequency we can be on. We do, a lot of times we'll model where it's going to go on the tower to make sure that it, you know, the signal's going in the right direction. So, you know, it's really easy to take, you know, to look at this and go, well, for $1,000, I can buy, you know, an old, you know, exciter, you know, use that as a transmitter, you know, find some old half inch line and, you know, a single bay, you know, broadband antenna and throw that on there and call it good. And it'll work, you know, I mean, it'll get you on the air, but it's going to sound like that. And it's going to perform like that. It's going to be $1,000 radio station. You know, the Gates Air transmitters and even the Nautels are, you know, just under $10,000 to buy just one. And, you know, a decent antenna is going to cost another couple $1,000. You got to buy new coax. But the results you get are so much better. And the station sounds so much better and the coverage is so much better that it's absolutely worth doing that. And, you know, take care in how you feed the audio to those. You know, the Ubiquiti radios have worked out great. There have been some situations now where I'm using some Mosley Starlinks, 4-channel Starlinks. But I do. I don't treat them as afterthoughts. And that is the biggest thing with all of this is, you know, look at it as a full power radio station, because when you build it correctly, it will perform pretty close to a Class A in a lot of cases. So that's my big tip with that is, you know, take your time. And you know, I understand there are budgetary constraints, you know, and in those cases, you know, typically I go with audio processing first and then, you know, spend the money on a transmitter. If I had to go used, you know, I'd put a lot of my money into the audio because transmitters, you know, they're all kind of the same. I will say that, you know, the newer Nautels and the newer Gates Airs and things sound a lot better just audio quality wise than say the older Nikoms or the Crowns that sound okay, but they're not, you know, the bandwidth and the frequency response and everything aren't as good as some of these newer transmitters. But if you, you know, spend the money on audio delivery and audio quality, then the rest of it, while it matters, it can be covered up a little bit. You know, if you have some signal impairments, you know, that can be overcome if your audio sounds really good. So be sure to look at that first. You know, I don't know how many translators I've seen that have, you know, an Omnia or an old Optimod 8000 or something that they had sitting on the shelf forever going, oh, we can use this again. Sure you can, but it's going to sound really bad. And people just aren't going to listen to that. So, you know, that's kind of the thought process I go through. And I've probably put on, I don't know, at least 10 of these in the past year, and they all do really, really well. And then also, you know, always evaluate that. I do have one now that I'm, you know, we're already looking at maybe making some changes after it's been on the air for a bit, because we think we can do better. You know, we looked at it and went, well, you know, if we do this and we do that, you know, we think that we're going to get some better performance out of it. And, you know, this goes with anything I do, but it's always trying to squeeze that every last ounce of performance out of it. So, you know, it's so important. And again, it's that whole rising tide lifts all the boats. I mean, if you do this, then your competitors will do this and everybody wins. You know, we did that in lacrosse where, you know, all of a sudden we bought a bunch of stations there. We put in new processing. We, you know, upped our game a little bit, and everybody else in the market kind of followed along, and all of a sudden radio in that market's really good. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of the key. And again, fortunately I can rely on some really smart coworkers to help me too with ideas on how to make these things work even better.
Wow. A lot of great information. Chris, I was wondering, what do you do for remote control at your translator sites?
That's a great question. SNMP is really the way to go with that. What I do is I have an ARC Plus at one of my major transmitter sites, and I use SonicWall VPN appliances at all my locations, and I've created a VPN network. All of my locations, transmitter, office, everything else, are interconnected and are on one virtual LAN. What's great about the SonicWall is they're very affordable. So, you know, this is something that the big guys do. You know, Odyssey, iHeart, they do this kind of thing, but they buy really expensive gear to do it. This is something for, you know, stations our size. You know, you can buy them off lease for $300-$400, these firewalls. And they, you know, you create these VPNs. So all of my translator sites have internet connectivity either through Ubiquiti or, you know, I've had some sort of internet put in, and then I have one of these appliances. So they're all on one network. So using SNMP, my Burk can talk to all of them. So I log into my Burk remote control at my master site, and I have a listing of every one of my translators with the parameters and everything else, and I can turn them on and off. So by just having this one remote control and the VPN, I can control anything. And talk about affordable. I mean, we just made that one purchase for that one device, and now I can control everything from that one location without having to buy an individual remote for each one. And that was something that I worked a little bit on figuring out, but it works really well.
Get devices, actually, transmitter sites that aren't SNMP capable, and so you need to interface some analog ins and outs.
I was just going to say, Burk makes these Plus X devices that are basically, you know, the analog ins and outs. And then it talks through SNMP back to the Burk. So I can install these boxes in places where I don't have SNMP and use those for physical remote controls, but the ARC can see it as a device. So even in places where I don't have direct SNMP control, I can get remote control. So it's a really cost-effective way to do that. And not only that, but it allows you the option to log in and look at the GUIs of the transmitters, everything else, by having this VPN set up. It just makes it a lot easier to manage. And then you get into two, where you can come up with a standardized IP address scheme. And so I know that, you know, all of my transmitters end with .10, you know, and then the market number has a different, you know, 160, whatever. So it makes it real easy to manage, because I don't have to go back and look up what IP addresses are. I just need to know where it is and go, oh, that market is IP address is 160. That device is going to be .10. And I go right in and see it.
Wow, I've learned a lot. Tell you what, Chris, if you don't mind here, I'm going to give a practical engineering tip. Then we'll take our last break, and then we'll come back with our final tip of the week from you, and also a programming note about this week in Radio Tech. Next week, we're going to be celebrating 100 years of broadcasting in Atlanta, Georgia, at WSB, big 750. Is that their frequency there at WSB? We're going to be at the transmitter side of WSB. We're having a barbecue lunch with some engineers. And we've done this before. We've been there before just for a summer barbecue. But this is, they started in 1922 on the air. And we're going to be there next week. And by the way, we're not going to do it on Thursday either. The party, the barbecue, the celebration is on Tuesday next week. So it's on the 15th, this coming Tuesday. We're going to be there. So, all right. Now, here's my suggestion, my practical engineering tip. I did this some years ago with an Axia network, and I got asked about something similar, and I thought, well, I'll just give this person this tip that I'm doing. So a lot of times we may have program audio that is not yet processed, but it's the program audio that we want to go to more than one place. It needs to go to, let's say, the FM audio processor to go to the translator, and it needs to go to the STL and then to the AM site for the AM processor, and it needs to go to the streaming encoder computer, which has processing built into it, and then get put on this on the stream. So you've got program audio, and you want to be able to switch that program audio from several different sources. Maybe most of the time you're on the automation, but once in a while you need to go live from an audio console, or you need to put a bunch of stations on the same audio console if you have some kind of emergency or thing that needs to get commonly on the air. So the point is, you could, for example, I've got an Axia network. This is at a station in Greenville, Mississippi. We've got, I think we source 5 or 6 radio stations out of there now. And each station has more than one place for the program audio to go. Usually the second place is the streaming computer. And so I could set up using, for example, I could use Axia's Pathfinder program to do all this. Or there's another solution that's out there. I would be more complicated with more buttons, but I could go change the subscription at each of these devices, or the output that feeds that device, to change the program. But you know what? They may not all change together, or I may forget one, or something may be offline at the moment that I make a switch, and then it doesn't make the switch. In other words, I didn't have a common place, a common output, or a common place to say, whatever I subscribe to right here at this place, that's my program audio, and I'm going to make that available to different devices. Well, at first, I thought, you know what? I'm going to use one of my Axia X nodes. And it, you know, if you had a different AOIP system, you could do it with that too. But I took an output, and I took a one foot Cat 5 cable, and I just looped it back to an input. And so now whatever I tell that output to be, that's going to result in the switched input coming back in. And that's that post switched input is going to be the audio that I then subscribe to consistently at all the places where that station's audio needs to show up. So at the streaming computer input, and at the output that goes and feeds the STL, and also at the input to an audio processor for the FM, I make one switch and all the places switch, because they're all subscribed to the switched source that's on the network. Yes, I'm making a new source on the network, but it's the one that goes to all the sites. Well, then I thought, well, wait a minute, you know what? Instead of just a loop of cable there from an output to an input on a node, in my case, I need to insert EAS audio. And we even though our stations have slightly different coverage areas out of this one place, we just pick the biggest one and cover all the counties and use the same EAS. So we've got a relay. Actually, Mark Persons built it for us. We've got this relay for multiple stations that switches EAS in and out. Normally it passes, just program right through, but it'll switch to the EAS output when it needs to. Well, so I do this now for several stations. I think 5 stations come out of, come, say that again? Oh, sorry about that.
what you said.
Who is yelling at me? Which of my devices? Gosh. Oh, it's my watch. Good gosh. She who shall not be named. Okay, back to the story. So I, instead of just a loop of cable, I come out of a total of 5 XNode outputs, loop through the EAS relay, and then back in. That way, all of my feeds everywhere, because my business partner wanted the streaming feed to be post EAS. He wants everything to be to have EAS in it. And so, for each station, there's just one point that I tell it, hey, subscribe to the console, or subscribe to the other console, or subscribe to this automation, or subscribe to that automation. Or if we're working on the automation, I can push a button and tell that output to subscribe directly to the output of the Premier satellite receiver, for example. So that just makes it easy to have one place to switch, and all the places that are supposed to get the switched audio get the switched audio, because it comes right back in. Well, after looping through EAS, comes right back in. And so I even call it, you know, WNIX post EAS. And so that's, if I subscribe to WNIX post EAS, that is the complete ready to process, ready to go on the air feed of WNIX. Same for whatever all the other call letters are. We got so many callers, I can't remember them all. That's my tip. Yeah. So you
that's,
can,
that's
you
actually, can, that's actually a good one. We do the same thing. I have a station that runs sports, and you know, we have that same thing where we share the AAS relay box, and you know, it comes out of the AAS and goes to our stream and goes to this and that and the other thing. So when we are bypassing our studio, for example, when we're not live and we're running our automation directly in, that's the source that we're sending through the AAS to everything else. Now we can control that with functions in our Symbian machine. So we can hotkey and say, put the studio live, and all of a sudden it subscribes to the studio and it feeds everything. So yeah, that is a fantastic tip. If you're in that situation, you haven't done it yet, think about it, because it's handy.
Yeah. Yeah. Rather than trying to hit 3 things at the same time to switch them all. No, right. Just switch one thing and then bring it back in. And now you've got a switched source that you can send. That is what, so everything that subscribes to it, just subscribe to that one thing, and you're always assured that's going to be the right thing.
Yep.
Good deal. Hey, Chris, we're going to come back with one more tip or technique or practical thing from you in just a minute. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you by some very practical and innovative people in England. And you need to pay attention to what they do, because they make radio so much better. It's Broadcast Bionics and the terrific Camera One system.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics, designed to bring video to your audio content. Visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot, and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
You need to check out Camera One and all the other things at Broadcast Bionics. They really do make radio better, and they have a great test beds, that being some of the most popular radio stations in the world, headquartered in London, England, and plenty of other cities as well. So check them out. You can go to bionic.radio. Bionic.radio will get you to their website. You can check out Camera One and the other stuff too. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tarr, and Chris is going to wrap it up now with our last information, last hint, last practicality on practical engineering. Chris?
Well, you know, I, first of all, listening to that broadcast Bionics ad there, I think I need to use thrifty more in conversation every day.
That is thrifty. I know, it's a great word. It's a great word.
Thrifty and rubbish are two really good, English words.
British has it indeed, yeah.
Yes, yes. I was kind of noodling on, what to use for a tip of the day. And really, I don't know if it's a tip as much as a mindset, and that is, think about what the big radio groups are doing, and you'll find that there is always another way to do, there's usually a less expensive way to get close to the same results. And a great example of that is the VPN. It has become so useful for us as an organization to put all of our markets together. And, when you look at the surface, the way the industrial, enterprise grade hardware that some of the larger stations are using, it's really, really expensive, but it does a lot more than what we need to do, which is basically basic firewall and connecting our markets. And again, at $300 a pop, and I think I have 10 of them, that's $3,000, which is about the cost of one of the enterprise firewalls. And right. I was able to bring all of my locations together. And that is such a handy thing to have. So, you do that with redundant backups and things like that, creativity pays off. So, spend some time thinking outside the box and thinking of new ways to accomplish things that, have been done before, and don't settle for, well, we're small, we can't do that, because generally you can.
That's a good point. And used equipment, it can be a great, great source putting in technology.
I have a gentleman that does all of my work, Chuck Gennaro, and he's just a great electronics repair guy, former engineer. And so I buy used gear a lot in confidence, knowing that I just send it to him and he goes through it, makes sure it works okay, and sends it back to me. But, I just outfitted a studio with Axia that I bought used. And I, went through it, made sure it was okay. And we built, at the time would have been probably $30,000 worth of equipment for 10. So, I do keep my eye out for good recent used gear. And, I even in places where we don't necessarily need it, I'll get my hands on it and look at what do we have that's really old, that I can finally retire. But it's that thrifty, you got to look at it that way.
I want to bring another aspect to thrifty in the few seconds we have before our Suncast is going to kick us off. I've got a friend who's an engineer, and he does some engineering for my radio station in Mississippi. His name is Russell Lafferty. In fact, I'm going to have him on the show. He's agreed to come on the show sometime. And Russell, a lot of us engineers don't really have time anymore for component level troubleshooting and repair. And Chris, maybe you don't have time for that anymore. You mentioned Chuck Gennaro that you send things to. And I haven't really done component level for years now. I still have parts bins full of parts from when I did do component level repair. Well, Russ Lafferty is one of these guys that still does that, and he enjoys figuring it out and replacing and finding some of these hard to find parts that manufacturers use because they may have a run of parts made just for them or find some. Anyway, he's repaired a number of, say, UPSs or some of the big UPSs that are rack mount that the capacitors have dried out, and they're unusual little squat capacitors to fit in these rack mount cases. And he's done quite a few component level repairs for us. The kind of thing that I used to do. Chris, are you still doing much component level yourself?
No, I mean, I do some, but I generally just send it to Chuck because that's what he does. Yeah. So he gets it. He's a lot more efficient at it because he's got the parts and the time.
And there are engineers or shops that still specialize in that. Josh Bones has a guy that does that. Mike Patton has Jordan Tuck and others who do component level repair. And I noticed that you kind of said that sadly, like, no, I really don't do that anymore. And I'm the same way. I kind of miss that component level stuff.
Yeah. I loved having the time to do it, but you can't do it anymore. It's really hard.
Yeah. It takes time. So, well, good. Thank you for all the tips. Next week on Tuesday, we'll put announcements on the show, but we're going to do the show live next Tuesday. We'll replay it on Thursday at the usual time. Celebration of 100 years of WSB. We'll get lots of WSB history on the air. And so we'll have that and more to come. A whole 2022's left of This Week at Radio Tech. Chris, thanks a lot for being with us. I appreciate you sharing your experience and knowledge from the past couple of years with us.
As always, had a blast.
All right. Thanks a lot to Suncast for producing this show, This Week in Radio Tech. Really appreciate you, Suncast. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find another great podcast about wrestling if you want to hear about that. Also, Andrew Zarian's doing a nationwide radio show these days about wrestling. That's pretty cool as well. Tell your friends. And looks like we streamed on YouTube today. We're going to try that as just another outlet, another convenient way to alert you and say, hey, we're on the air. We'll still put the produced show on YouTube a day or two after the live show. So thanks a lot for that. Tell your friends, subscribe to us. That'd be terrific. And more importantly, if you talk to our sponsors, tell them, hey, thanks for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I do appreciate it. I listen to as many of the shows as I can and appreciate you helping to make that possible because it does. It costs money. Yes, all this hair costs money. And so we have to pay for it. Don't we, Chris? We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.